Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
We will end this hour with news from the state capitol. That's where Governor Dayton has vetoed a couple of key bills passed at the end of the legislative session. He held a press conference just a few minutes ago.
The session was not about working out agreements with me. It wasn't even about working out to the best interests of people in Minnesota. It was about the House Republicans cozying up to the moneyed special interests, giving what they wanted on opioids and elder care and NRA and the Minnesota Care buy-in, nixing that, and then getting their talking points to go around the state and claim that I vetoed some important measures, which I unfortunately were part of the bill. Yeah.
Governor Dayton speaking just moments ago up at the state capitol. Our Brian Baxt was there, and he joins me on the line. Brian, what exactly did the governor veto today?
Well, there were two main bills that he vetoed. One was a combination education and tax cut measure. The tax cut measure would have also brought Minnesota in line with some of the federal changes made in December. The education money was some new money, about $50 million from the state reserve that would have gone out to schools and then allowed them to use other money that they've already gotten in different ways. And the hope was that they would be able to head off layoffs or program cuts. And the other one he vetoed was this almost 1,000-page budget measure that had most of the work of the session in there, and it had school safety dollars. It had an opioid prevention measure that the governor said fell short. It had some elder care protections that the governor didn't think went far enough. And it had money to fix that MNLARS problem and help make some of those deputy registrars that issue licenses and titles whole again. It was a pretty wide-ranging bill, so there's a lot in there that people will probably be upset about, and who they're going to blame is yet to be seen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we just heard the governor talking about some of the things that he was concerned about. Is it possible to really boil down what his main objections were to these bills? Was it purely process?
Well, it was part process. In fact, he issued letters that accompany his vetoes, and he talked about how the budget bill had 51 policy provisions in there that he just didn't want part of that bill. He said a lot of the stuff, if it was so important, they should have not put it in an all-or-nothing bill. And he said that legislative gamesmanship was terrible, and as a result, he wouldn't sign the bill. And on the case of the tax bill, he was not comfortable with the way they structured the business side of things and also some of the individual cuts. He didn't think that the individual tax cuts were enough or didn't balance out with the amount that businesses will save based on the rewrite of the state's code. And, of course, that education money, which was something he's been talking about quite a bit the last few weeks, he said it just wasn't enough to deal with the problems, and he didn't want to give false hope to schools.
Well, we've already obviously been hearing from various groups who were clearly deeply frustrated that small, essentially nonpartisan two-line items in these bills were probably going to fall victim to a veto of a larger bill. I mean, who in Minnesota will really be affected by these decisions?
Well, already Republicans are out with a list of two dozen types of people or groups of people that will be affected, whether it be kind of healthcare providers that rely on state reimbursements that would have been evened out a little bit more, or those deputy registrars we talked about, the opioid folks who are dealing with addiction, or counties that are trying to get people through these addiction steps. But the governor said that the bills were structured in a way that there was just too many flaws in them. And he says lawmakers should have broken it up and should have negotiated more with him.
Now, these were two of the big bills, but there are other bills waiting there for decisions from the governor, including the bonding bill. Did he give any clue as to what he might be thinking about that?
He didn't. He said he hopes to decide the fate of all the remaining bills by Friday. He technically has another week beyond that, but he says he wants to get it all wrapped up. He's inclined to sign at least some of that, even if he doesn't agree with all those projects, because he can use his line item veto to get rid of projects he doesn't like. And there's also the bill that deals with the pension fix. That's something he's wanted. That's something that passed unanimously in the legislature. So the thought is he will sign that. And then there's this wild rice bill that deals with the sulfate standard in waters that where wild rice grows. He says he's conflicted on that one. And so that's the one that kind of where we're going to be held in suspense over.
Now, you mentioned a list of groups of people affected by this released by the Republicans. I'm assuming that this is the, I don't know if it's the beginning of a war of words. I'm sure the Republicans have had a lot to say already.
Absolutely. Since the session ended, they've been rallying people who had a stake in this bill to say, here's why we think the governor should sign it. You're going to hear a lot more of that as the summer and the fall campaign wears on. The Democrats, you know, they brought up some people, too, who said that they were unsatisfied with the bill. So you'll probably hear them saying that. So this is going to all just trickle into the campaign. As the governor says, he's not calling lawmakers back, so there's really no way that they're going to fix it before the election. He left the door open a little bit to doing something after the election. But in the meantime, one of the big things is the Department of Revenue is going to have to adjust the state's filing system because it's going to be so mismatched with what the federal government has done. So that will take several months to figure out. And there's still a chance that they come back in January for their next legislative session and speed through a tax fix bill. So all hope is not lost there.
Well, as you said, the governor could call a special session to fix some of the problems that he has with these bills. But he said he's not going to do it. I mean, do you think there's any chance at all that we could? I mean, that clearly there's going to be a lot of people very upset.
We've been hearing this line from the governor for several weeks now that he will only call a special session if it snows in July. And of course, NPR's meteorologists tell us that July is the only month where it hasn't snowed in Minnesota. So it's a pretty hard line that he's drawing there. But you know, there will be this drumbeat of could he, might he? You know, is there something we can do to make it more palatable? But he just said they had their chance. They had months to do this, and this is the product they gave me, and now they have to live with the consequences.
So, just in 30 seconds, what happens now?
Well, you'll hear a lot of the blame the rest of the day. And then, of course, you'll hear people trying to respond to what will happen with the tax code and what will happen with some of these programs that were kind of in limbo.
Wonderful. Brian Bax covers politics for us. He's at the Capitol this morning, where Governor Dayton has vetoed two big pieces of legislation, the tax bill and the budget bill. Thanks very much, Brian.
You're welcome.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.